Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner, joined this week by Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel, and Imran Razvi, who grew up a Shiite Muslim and is now a Christian. Our show is brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? And don't forget, if you are a big fan of the Frederick Faith Debate, and who isn't after all, you can get your daily fix every day. Go to WFMD.com, find the Faith Debate page. I have a weekday daily posting there. I take the weekends off. Jonathan Schweitzer, he doesn't do it every day, but then he makes up for lost time. Like if he skips 10 or 12 days, sometimes he'll put 10 or 12 postings up all at once just to catch up. And there are podcasts of the show. If you should hear a show that you particularly like, you can go back and listen to again or tell a friend about it. Or if, you know, somehow you got up at 9 o'clock instead of 8:30 and you missed the show, you could always catch it. It's usually up within 24 to 48 hours of the broadcast up on the podcast. And it's been interesting. I had a chance recently to listen back to some of the shows as we were getting the podcast section, the audio vault portion of the website up and running, and to listen to the show and how it has changed a little bit over time. But I will say it has been consistent in one thing. I've been great throughout.
That's right. That's right. And you're still trying to get one over on me, right? Without a doubt.
Yeah. No. In all seriousness, I think that the original purpose and plan for this show has maintained it. We've maintained our integrity. So I think we should be kind of proud of that, I think.
Yes, yes.
The other side is
it's kind of a part of who we are, isn't it? I mean, I feel like, you know, it's in us to stay focused on both, you know, you're digging in deep and not being afraid to ask the hard questions. You know, I think at the end of the day that if you're made that way, then, you know, it's hard to change.
So that's the good news. The bad news is we've demonstrated no growth in 3.5 years.
That's right.
But Raz is here to help us with that problem.
Yes.
He's like the miracle grow for
here
the program.
You go. Yes, today.
So he's going to give us the nutrients that we need.
Beautiful.
And again, I'm going to probably, at his suggestion, call him Raz throughout the show. But, you know, his real name is Imran. Which sounds like a Muslim name, perhaps. Somebody who might have been from that part of the world. Did you grow up outside the United States?
I was born and in Pakistan. I became a U.S. citizen when I was young. I came to the U.S. when I was 4 years old and grew up here in the U.S. as a Muslim and was a very devout Muslim. Prayed my five prayers and went to the mosque and did all the things that a Muslim, good Muslim boy does, even though we were in this infidel country.
And which version of Islam, which sect of Islam?
I was born and raised Shia, and I was the eldest son of the eldest son going back several generations. So there was some tradition there as well.
Wow. So for you to be a Christian now, this will be an interesting conversation.
Yes.
Now, at what age did you leave behind your Shia religious practices and either become or start thinking about becoming a Christian?
What age when I was that? 20, when I was in college, through the Campus Crusaders, they were relentless came after me, and eventually one of them said the right things and got my heart to soften up enough to do some research and try to find out more about the truth, because I knew all the pat answers that Muslims told us to fight Christians and fight the influence of Christianity and the Bible and how to defend our faith. So I was very easy and very able to defend myself until some, you know, a Campus Crusader said a couple of the right things and got me thinking.
Now, I want to go into the whole process of, you know, you embracing Christianity and leaving Islam behind. But before we get there, this is, for us, a rare opportunity. I've had a chance to meet one other time before today's show, to meet Raz, and I don't even know if he remembers meeting me, but it was in the context of the Ahmadiyya community wanting to build their retreat in Walkersville. And there was obviously some community backlash, and there was some backlash within the Christian community too, some pastors and stuff who were like, we got to keep them out. And Jonathan Schweitzer, to his credit, organized a luncheon meeting. Was it a luncheon or breakfast? I can't remember.
It was a luncheon, yeah.
A luncheon meeting that involved quite a few of the pastors, Christian pastors in town, and a few members of the Ahmadiyya community. And Raz was there. I'm not sure how the two of you met. I'll have to ask you that question maybe at some point.
We met there.
Oh, you met there? How did you know what was going on?
Through another pastor that was there. He invited me.
Interesting. Okay.
Bernie Beal, right?
Yes, Bernie Beal.
Yeah. So the Lord was at work.
From Campus Crusaders.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, in that meeting, it struck me how articulate and thoughtful and reasonably well-schooled in both some very fundamental Christian principles and what seemed to me to be very fundamental Muslim principles that Raz can bring to the table. So I want to use some time here to kind of pick your brain a little bit. I'm the average dumb American.
Well, I want to correct you for a minute. I'm not very well-schooled.
Okay, well, on your own, maybe you've taken, you've done some reading or studying, or you listen attentively or something, because you seem like
I listen,
know.
And I've, I was a devout Muslim, and so I was very much involved in the Muslim faith. And then when I left, didn't want anything to do with the Muslim faith, and I kind of hid from any Muslim for several years. And then, yeah, at that point, it was just building a relationship with Christ and knowing, that I was saved. And I was at the point that I didn't feel the remorse that a lot of Christians feel for other people that are not saved, because I was so afraid of even getting involved to that point. And only recently, in the last, I guess, 5 years, I got to the point where I'm feeling a little bit more of, you know, where are my parents and my brother and sister and my relatives and all the Muslim world is going. And now it's become more of a point of contention with me that I need to do more. And I think God's opened some doors for me to speak. I've spoken to a couple churches about my testimony and about really how to talk to a Muslim without becoming antagonistic and having them going and trying to just, you know, give the pat answers. There's a lot of different ways, unique ways, and I think we'll talk about some of that later.
Yeah.
Now, as I started to say, and now I have the opportunity to say it a second time, I'm the average dumb American. And although I will say that because of this show and other things going on in my life, I probably know a little bit more about the history and the foundation of Christianity than the average American does, because not many people in America are immersing themselves in a show like this and having regular conversations with pastors like Jonathan and others. But that said, I'm very similar, I would think, to the general landscape in not knowing a whole lot about things that are relatively foreign to America. And, you know, the percentage of the population in America that is Muslim is pretty tiny. And so we don't know a lot about it. So, okay, the first 20 years of your life, you know, if you can, in a relatively short time, tell me some things that are important for you to know about Shia belief, about, and how it maybe compares, if you know, if you feel comfortable talking about how it compares to other sects of Islam, whether it be the Ahmadiyya group or whatever. I mean, how similar are they? It seems like they fight with each other a lot. What's that all about? You know, what can you tell me about the first 20 years of your life?
Well, first of all, there's really two main sects of Islam, Shia and Sunni. Then from there, there's splinter groups and many different kinds. I had never heard of the Ahmadiyya group until I went to that luncheon. It was very unusual. It was more of a, you know, new age type of Muslim, yeah, I'd never met before.
Yeah.
But I grew up as a Shia, and Shia, there was two sects. They divided up when the Prophet Muhammad passed away. And then who was going to be the leader? So one group decided they're going to elect from the followers or the disciples of Muhammad an imam. And the other group said, no, we're going to go with the line of Prophet Muhammad, and first Ali is going to be the next imam, which everybody agreed upon because he was the first Muslim. And then from there, it'll be Ali's sons and so forth. And it was going to be a kingdom type of thing, and that was the Shia. The Sunni said, no, we're going to elect the most eligible, the most learned, the most whatever, as the imam.
So Muhammad's bloodline is the Shiite line?
Correct. In fact, my name, Razvi, is son of Raza, Razavi, which is one of the last imam from the side of the line of Prophet Muhammad.
Really? And so to this day, the Shiites still track, you know, like a lead imam all the way back through to...
Well, it's genealogy. I mean, if you look at the Bible, when I first became a Christian, I looked at numbers and I said, why is God wasting all this time with genealogy? What is the problem? What is the reason? I mean, this is just a waste. I can't even pronounce half these names.
Right.
So it didn't click to me. It should have, because I grew up with that genealogy and know how important it is, and God makes it very, very clear. Genealogy is important. You have to know who your father is.
Hmm.
Blessings and curses are gone through your bloodline, through the father. And being firstborn son is very important in the Bible. And it still should be. And in this culture, it really isn't.
And you are a firstborn son.
I am firstborn going back several generations. My father was firstborn son as well.
And so what does that mean for you? Does that mean that you kind of represent nobility or you know, what does that represent?
You can say it that way. I mean, I can trace back my ancestors to, you know, princes and such. But I never thought of it that way. More of it was my responsibility to take care of my family. Mm. I'm the oldest.
Mm.
And I, you know, in our culture, we take care, the older son takes care of the parents as well, and is the, not only the family head, but the religious head of the family as the oldest son. And that was my role, and that's what I was being groomed to be. And my father was as well, since he was the eldest son. He was very, very learned, and he was very much of a mover and shaker in the community, Muslim community. And that's one of the reasons I really kind of shied away from proclaiming my Christianity in that community, because out of respect for my father, I wanted to, when the communications opened up again, I didn't want to jeopardize my relationship with my parents.
Right.
So it kind of stayed away from that community.
Very prudent of you.
Yeah, we'll swing back around to that in a second, but I do want to press into this history stuff because, I mean, I've already learned things.
Coming back to the Shiite and the Sunni, are there any other theological differences there?
Well, that's the main difference. And then there's little minor differences of, you know, the Sunnis pray with their hands clasped. Shiites pray with their hands on their sides. The biggest difference was...
That seems like a really minor thing.
It is very minor. But it's there.
Okay.
But also, the biggest thing happened when in Karbala, in Iraq, you guys watch the news, you see Karbala is there. It's a little city. It's a crossroads of rivers. When Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, was coming back from his pilgrimage, his family, and it was his whole extended family, was stopped there by Muawiyah, who was the other imam from the Sunni side. Mm. And he said, "I'm the elected imam, and you will bow down to me. You will acknowledge me as the head of the Muslim world." And Imam Hussein said, "No, I'm not going to do that." So they wouldn't let him drink or his family drink. And it's a desert. So if you don't get a drink, there's no place else you can get water.
Wow. So this is like a major standoff.
It was. It was a major standoff for several days until finally, out of dehydration, desperation, Imam Hussein said, "Okay, we'll fight. We're not going to give in. We're not going to compromise our principles." And so they were basically slaughtered. It was like 10 to 1 or 20 to 1. And they were slaughtered.
So who won, the Shiites or the Sunnis?
The Sunnis. They slaughtered
Sunnis.
Slaughtered them. Plus, they were dehydrated. They were outnumbered and dehydrated.
Yeah, they slaughtered the family of Prophet Muhammad. Mm. And so the Shias...
including, like, his wife? Those kinds
mostly
of people?
All the male children, and some of them were taken captive. And
so anybody that could have been construed to be an heir to Muhammad.
And did that wipe out all potential heirs?
No, there were some hidden, and that's why the imams continued, and it stayed that way.
Yeah.
But the main thing was, at that point, that's where the biggest splinter was, and then they couldn't get together, because obviously, you know, that's why they still fight.
Yeah.
I have plenty of Sunni friends, growing up Sunni friends. My parents had Sunni friends. So coming to the U.S. kind of opens it up, because, hey, you're not allowed to kill people here.
Case back in Pakistan. They wouldn't have had Sunni friends. But because they were here...
They would have had some. It depends on the circles.
Oh.
But that's why Iran and Iraq fought so many years. Iran is mostly Shia.
Yeah.
And Iraq was ruled by Sunnis. Now, it has a lot of Shias in it, but it's mostly Sunnis.
Right.
Saudi Arabia is mostly Sunnis.
Okay.
And again, that's my understanding. I'm not as learned as some people out there listening might be, but that's how I was brought up and taught. Mm. But we had plenty of Sunni friends. It's just that the Shias will take a month to commemorate the death of Imam Hussein, the slaughter of his family. Mm. And they will flagellate themselves. I mean, they'll cut themselves, they'll hit themselves for a month commemorating his death and his suffering. My family never got into that severe of commemoration. We went to the masjid, we went and listened, and we cried and we wept and we, you know, did all that, but we didn't cut ourselves, we didn't, you know, hit ourselves to the point of bleeding, although that was I saw friends doing it. And that was one of the reasons that the Campus Crusader had brought up to me. He said, "Look, you saying that Jesus was saved from the cross by God so he wouldn't have to suffer and die, And that's what the Muslims believe, and that's what I was taught, that, you know, Jesus never died on the cross. So if he didn't die on the cross, how could he die for you? So that was my answer. And he didn't use the Bible saying he died for the cross. He said, well, if he didn't die for the cross, okay, I'll take that, fine. Then if God went out of his way to protect this one man, because he was only a man in your opinion.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't anybody's, but he was a prophet, but he was a man.
Yeah.
Why didn't he protect Prophet Muhammad's entire family, who was also supposed to be sinless?
Oh, wow.
I had never thought of that.
Wow.
And I said,
and so Christ was protected as a prophet, but the whole family wasn't. You're
correct.
A Shiite. That's a major...
I'd never thought of it that way. And then he went further to say, well, Muslims believe that babies are born sinless. Okay? If that's the case, why isn't God protecting all these innocent babies all over the world? What was so special about Jesus that he couldn't die on the cross?
Okay, so let me see if I'm following this. You're saying that the reason that theologically the Muslims say the reason that Jesus was protected and would never have died is because God has to protect innocent, pure people.
No, that wasn't it at all.
Oh, okay.
But that's got what got me thinking. Why would he protect Jesus and not protect anybody else?
And then furthermore, why isn't he protecting all these innocent children?
If he is the God that is all that he's supposed to be, and the reason why he protected Jesus was because, you know, Jesus was special and he was sinless and God didn't want him to suffer and die on the cross, what about all the other suffering?
Now, you were telling us ahead of time that in your perspective on the way that Christians approach Muslims, oftentimes Christians come in saying, well, you have to believe this and you have to believe this, but what made the difference for you, and you feel like it's true in a broad-based way, you know, for Muslims in general, that what makes the difference is almost when you understand their religion better than they do and you just ask questions about the inconsistencies that are there, i.e. like what happened with you, you know, how come Jesus wasn't protected?
Right. I mean, the Quran was written in Arabic, and only in the last, I guess, 40 years was it translated into any other language.
Yeah.
It was illegal to translate the Quran. If you translated it, you'd be put to death. Arabic was the religion of God. Okay.
Yeah.
And you couldn't translate it.
So then, even growing up in Pakistan, then you have to, you know, learn it in Arabic. Dude, what do they speak in Pakistan? Do they speak Arabic?
No, they speak Urdu, which is the same as Hindi in India.
Oh.
It's just written in a different script, but it sounds the same.
Okay. And so basically you spoke a variation of Hindu, but in order to read the Quran, then you would have had to study and know Arabic.
No, I could read Arabic. I didn't understand it.
You could read it but not understand
right.
it?
Right.
That's got to be frustrating.
Well, just like the Catholics for a long time, they could read Mass, but they couldn't understand it.
Mm.
So the priest in Catholicism would tell them what to believe.
Right.
And only the ones like Martin Luther who actually read it and decided this is really not what it's supposed to, what the scriptures say, was able to come back and confront it. And same thing with Muslims. They are told what to believe by the Mulanas and the Hadiths and the proclamations of the Imam, and most of them are not literate to the point where they can understand Arabic for themselves.
Mm, really?
Only up until the last 40 years when the Quran started being translated is when people actually started reading it in different languages.
Mm.
And even then, a lot of the Mulanas really, really frown upon people reading it in their own language. They'll say, you will not get what God is saying to you unless you read it in Arabic.
Yeah, I've heard this over and over again, that the only really pure interpretation of the Quran come out of reading it in the Arabic.
It's not an interpretation. The only pure
reading of it
is Arabic.
Yeah. But you still, to this day, don't do that in Arabic. You don't read in Arabic.
I can still read in Arabic
somewhat. So that you could understand it?
Not that I can understand it. I can read it. Just like you could read Spanish, but could you understand Spanish? It's written in the English script.
No.
Exactly.
That was Spanish when I said no there. Did you get that?
The accent. That was very good, yeah.
You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate. I'm Troy Skinner. Jonathan Schweitzer is the one who's attempting to speak Spanish. He has a Spanish vocabulary of one word.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Sorry, that was shameless.
He is the senior pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel in Frederick. And Imran Razvi, who grew up a Shiite Muslim and is now a Christian. And we've touched on Jesus and Christianity a little bit, but I don't want to go there just yet.
Right.
Help me understand, is it a pretty even split, 50-50 Sunni versus Shia, or is one a much more dominant population than the other around the world?
Sunni is much more dominant, and they are in more, I mean, my family taught me to believe they're more violent. I don't really know. I mean, that's, you know, coming from a biased standpoint. So again, I only know from growing up in a Shia household that the Sunni and the Sufi sect of the Sunnis are very violent. And there's a lot of persecution of Shias in Pakistan, in Iran, not so much right now, but there has been. And around the world, in different Muslim countries, Sunnis are much more dominant sect. And there is always going to be fighting. That's,
so then what are the main nations that have the Shiites in them? All of them? All of the Middle East nations?
I mean, the Shias are all over, but there's...
Like, where are they in ascendancy? Maybe that's a good question.
Iran and Iraq, there were more Shias.
Okay.
Iran, mostly Iran, is basically a Shia nation.
Oh, okay.
And they're...
And so the Shah in Iran is Shia?
Well, the Shah in Iran was... came to the U.S. and got and England and studied and learned, and that's why the Maulana took over, because he became too westernized, culturalized, and that's why the relationship between the U.S. and Iran went downhill when Ayatollah Khomeini took over as the Muslim head and got rid of the Shah, who then went to exile.
Wow. And the point is that the Shah was becoming more westernized.
Correct.
They didn't want that. They wanted him to be a pure
Shia.
Well,
think about it. Think about it from this point of view.
Sure.
If you love God,
yeah,
okay, and you love his tenets and want to be a good, God-fearing person,
yeah,
and you see this country that you know is a Christian country,
right,
and you look at their advertisements, you look at their TV shows, you look at their
right.
All the things that are there,
yeah,
and you ascribe all of that to Christianity.
Yeah, well, this has been my, you know, I've been on a lot of trips, you know, to other nations, mission trips, as it were, and I've been shocked. I was in Albania, I've been in the Middle East, you know, I've been in South Africa, and I'm shocked at how pervasively people look at our number one export, which is movies and music, and they think that Christianity means immorality. I'm shocked at how pervasive that, you know, it's easy for a Muslim who lives in the Middle East to think that about the United States.
Exactly, and that's why they hate this country, because it's an immoral, amoral, basically. It has no morals anymore. We've gone away from...
Okay, so I got a question for you. Since you come from, you know, 20 years growing up in a Shia Muslim family, pretty devout, if the United States, obviously there's a big if, but if the United States were to genuinely, you know, follow God and be moral and not have the pervasive sex, drugs, rock and roll, all this stuff, you know, throughout all our music and movies, do you think that we would be less hated by the Middle East? The problem is that's a very complex question, because you get into dealing with politics and whether or not we support Israel and those kinds of things.
If by some miracle that happened.
Yeah. I mean,
if by some miracle that happened, I'm sure that there will be other reasons to hate this country.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Because...
Nevertheless, that just kind of adds a little icing on the cake for
it them. It is, because what's happening is the U.S. for many years has, in the Muslim worldview, have been kingmakers. They've been propping up bad regimes, dictatorships all over the world. Mm-hmm. They've been putting people into power and having Muslims fight Muslims to keep that part of the world down.
Yeah.
And I grew up with that... knowledge and with that almost hate of, and it was a lot of it was prescribed to the Jewish population controlling the U.S. government.
Right.
Okay. And again, these are all things that were taught to me. I don't have any proof.
Now we're getting into politics, and I think there's a lot of roads to go down there. Troy, did you want to go that direction?
Well, we're not going to have time to pursue them. We've got maybe a minute and a half left in the show, believe it or not. So, here's what I'm thinking we might do.
Yeah.
If Raz is agreeable and Jonathan's agreeable and you, the listener, are agreeable, I think that next week I'd like to pick up and see if we can't get a little bit more sense of the flavor of what it's like growing up a Muslim, particularly a Shia Muslim, and what that all means. And then maybe we can get into what that meant for you in relation to other religions and geopolitical considerations like Israel, like dealing with the quote unquote Christian West and those sorts of things, and then progress into talking about the whole conversion to Christianity, what led to that, what that's meant for you, in the immediate aftermath of that, relation with your family, friends, what have you, and then kind of where you are now. It's kind of, you know, it's a long road to try to get there, but there's an awful lot of ground to cover here.
Yeah,
and
without a doubt.
So if that seems like
a pretty good plan,
then maybe that's the way we'll go.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, before we end, I would urge everybody that's listening, the best thing you can do for the Muslim world, and I don't want to offend anybody by saying that 9/11 was really the best thing that happened for the new Muslim world, because that's when Christians got out of their shells and prayed for the Muslim world. Mm-hmm. And that's what you can do. If you can pray for the Muslim world, I really believe our prayers are what's making a difference there. And I can tell you from my family, there are stories that they don't want to tell me of people that have never heard of Jesus, seeing Jesus, learning the Lord's Prayer from somebody, from a man that they describe is Jesus. He's alive and well there, and I want you to know that through our prayers, he is there and saving people without our help. He doesn't need our help, but he would like our prayers, and that's what I wanted to make sure you guys knew that.
I met some people in Israel when I was there that have similar kind of stories to that. So, yeah.
Well, maybe we'll talk more about that as we progress in the shows, the series of shows we're going to do. Thank you. Imran Razvi, Jonathan Schweitzer, thanks to our sponsor, Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD.